Hi, I'm Nick.
Hi, I'm Thomas.
And this is the Unbossing Podcast.
A show about unleashing the full potential of every organization.
I've been with Novartis 14 years and approaching 7 years in this role. It took me to different countries before starting actually in this role. So I've worked initially in Belgium, then in the UK, Switzerland, on Asia, and then 5 years in the US. And then I came a little bit to my own surprise into this position, leading the people function at Novartis. Now, a few years into that role, we prepared for a CEO transition at Novartis. And many boards will just compare candidates. The great thing was in this transition, we managed to have a discussion with the board of what are the jobs to be done in the next 5 to 10 years. And what transpired was, first, of course, some of the things we need to fix, then some discussion about our strengths. But eventually the discussion moved on to why is it that we have such an incredible, talented group of people here at Novartis? Why is it that we are consistently rated as one of the top pipelines in the industry? So we have fantastic products. And so normally, in simple logic, you would think best people multiply that by best products should equal exceptional performance. And there where, if you look back, our performance was good, but it was not top. So we were not in the upper quartile. So We started to reflect on what's getting in the way, and we sadly had to conclude that a culture that had served us so well in the first phase of the existence of the company was starting to hold us back. So the perfectionistic, the top-down, the rigid control was preventing breakthrough innovation, was preventing some balanced risk-taking, was possibly even leading to some issues where people were making decisions to meet a target rather than pursuing a purpose. And so the entire selection process for the next CEO was geared behind four priorities, but culture change became a top priority. And so what was exciting when we then welcomed the new CEO, who was an internal promotion, he is a person who truly believes through his own experience that culture is what drives the success of an organization, whether that's innovation, performance, or integrity. And he learned possibly the hard way that the answer to any problem is within the team, rarely with the boss. He is a medical doctor, Harvard. I mean, he comes with all the credentials that blows us away, but he also learned that there are limitations to the strength of any leader when that leader believes that he or she carries all the answers. And so that was the beginning of a culture change journey where, as an executive team, we had several sessions of what would be our priorities going forward, but culture became number one, and we defined culture as inspired, so purpose-driven, curious, so a learning culture rather than a know-it-all culture, and unbossed. And unbossed was and still is, and you see the same, a very provocative term.
Exactly.
to basically really get the attention that the empowerment is what matters. But we take it further than empowerment. We go deep into self-aware leadership. We go into flipping the pyramid where a leader is in support of the team. We explore concepts such as psychological safety, and you name it.
Mm-hmm.
We're 3 years into the journey. We take also a very data-driven approach. We are a science-based company. We love a hypothesis, and then we do a clinical trial behind it. So we recruit patients into the trial, and then we have a readout.
Yeah.
So in such an environment, we do the same thing. We have a hypothesis. We measure. We see what works. We fine-tune, and so on. So now we're 3 years into it.
Yeah. Stephen, do I understand that right? This realization of having the best people, having fantastic products, nevertheless, performance is not on top of all competitors. That realization came from the board of Novartis.
Yeah.
And even the decision to say, listen, guys, there is one thing we have to work on in order to become as competitive as we would like to be, and that's the culture. That came also from the board. Do I understand that right? That's remarkable.
Mm. That's what separates the successful cases on embossing from the failures. Common patterns that we see in our studies is that when you considered it as some type of side track, and the CEO and the board just give them the okay to start somewhere in the organization, and in a couple of months let us know how it went, that's a recipe for disaster. So the CEO must be the driver, and the board must be supportive and believers. And I also like, Steven, your measure and fine-tune approach, because one of the many things we get back when we are evangelizing basically at other companies is that it's easy for traditional boards to put this in the rather fluffy corner of doing business, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And what I like is that you say, okay, this is a hypothesis, and we apply a very strict approach of measuring, learning, and fine-tuning this as a approach. So this is your business optimization, right?
Yeah. There is a soft side, and there is definitely a very hard side.
Mm-hmm.
So it is not an invitation. It's not optional. And so we are progressing well with building what we call a culture sense, which is being designed by data scientists and behavioral scientists, where we are making correlations between our market share, our financial performance, KPIs in our manufacturing organization, and on the other hand, cultural indicators and leadership indicators.
Mm-hmm.
By now, we have been able to establish a very clear link that leaders drive culture, and so that you see a significant improvement in the culture of a unit when the leader is self-aware. COVID is making it hard right now to establish a strong causal link between sales and leadership, because of course the best leaders are very inclusive, very empathic leaders during these COVID situations. You see their culture go up, but of course COVID has an impact on the sales.
Yeah.
And so you could almost draw the wrong conclusion right now, that where culture goes up, sales goes down, but there is that disruption factor of COVID. We think we will need anywhere between 7 to 12 data sets to have the beginning of a very reliable data model to demonstrate a sustainable correlation and causal link between culture and performance.
Okay.
We're building,
yeah.
And we're making good progress.
Say, Steven, so you say you're three years down the journey. Just imagine that a typical journey is discovering what embossing is, engaging the top of the organization, starting experiments, and then slowly but surely going viral and into the organization. where would you say that you that Novartis is at now at this stage?
Yeah, so we're a company of 105,000 people, and so we operate globally. So it is really shifting an oil tanks direction. The second thing that we have decided to do is that the cornerstone of our organizational change starts with individual change. So we believe that every leader, every manager in the organization needs to show individual behavioral change before you can expect an organization to change. So whilst there is communication behind it, whilst there is an employee experience and all of that behind it, for us, the most important thing is how leaders show up. So that requires us to rethink and reskill 20,000 people leaders in the company. By the end of this year, so in a few weeks, we will have reskilled 5,000 leaders through an intensive intervention, which goes deep into creating more self-aware, more vulnerable leadership. We measure that by regular 360s, by regular team upwards feedback. So every leader takes 2 360s a year, and so we can look at the data, and we start to see that for those 5,000, we have a significant different culture compared to the remainder of the organization.
Fantastic.
So to answer your question in short, we're 5,000 out of 20,000, but we have designed a proof of concept that gives us confidence that if we roll this out to all 20,000, that we will have really changed the culture of the company.
Well, and I like the answer very much, Steven, and I'll explain my reasoning behind the question. I don't see any successful case, definitely not in the scale of Novartis, but even smaller businesses that do this journey in less than 5 years. And that's the reason why I asked the question, just to manage expectations of other leaders. We often find in the first interviews that we have that they see this as a project, like, okay, and this needs to be done. So you have obviously very short-term results, successes, but the entire journey, it's not a project, it's a journey that takes several years. So that's we need to be humble, especially when it's a company like Novartis, 100,000 people. I mean, we need to be humble in this journey as well. So that was the reasoning behind my question. And a follow-up question that I have, Steven, is another misconception that many people have about unbossing is in terms of structure, that the only alternative of what we have today is, oh, this means an unbossed organization doesn't have any structure, there's normal hierarchy, et cetera. Yeah. So I suggest you didn't transform Novartis into a company with no hierarchies anymore. Could you elaborate a little bit on that, please?
It's funny you mention it, because that was indeed the initial confusion. And I actually even was fine with it, because if we had just chosen the term empowerment, everybody would say, oh, yeah, that makes sense. But there would be no discussion about it. So the fact that initially people asked, so does that mean there are no more reporting lines? Will we just all do whatever we want? Was good, because the fact that you have the discussion is already exploring the new reality you want to get to. So we definitely got that question over and over again. For us, unbossing starts with creating clarity, and that is a very important task for any leader, of really bringing clarity of what is the problem we're trying to solve for. And that is, again, not just defined by the leader, but is a team exercise of really being very clear as a team of what's the problem we're trying to solve for. The key concept of unbossing, in my view, is then the belief that the answer is within the organization and is not coming from the leader. The leader's job is to create an environment, provide the resources, remove the obstacles so that the team can work through the problem at pace. Mm-hmm. And then the other misconception is often that it means, so, okay, it's not anarchy. By now we have established that there's a clear direction. It's like a tennis game. Everybody knows the rules of the game, but then you play the game. So as long as you stay within the framework. But the second misconception is that the leader no longer makes decisions. There are moments where every voice is heard. When you deal with very complex matters, there is sometimes no obvious decision. And so you then also need to have clear protocols of how you will make decisions. That can be a majority, that can be a consensus, that can be also occasionally that the leader, in order to allow the team to progress, will need to make a decision so that, again, it's clear and we can go to the next tollgate. Those protocols are very important and hard to establish, because the risk is that it gets misperceived as the leader now needs to win every popularity contest, that the leader needs to be liked by every team member. And then you go into a different socialized concept. It's great to have conflict on task. It shouldn't spill over on conflict on the relation. Mm. But I would argue that if you don't have any conflict of task, you're not maximizing the innovation potential that exists within your team. Mm.
Yeah, go ahead, Thomas.
Stephen, I think this is wonderful. This, what your statement, unbossing starts with clarity. Mm-hmm. Because also what we see, Nick, in daily practice is even if there is a conviction there and a gut feeling that unbossing is the right thing to do, simply that statement is not enough. It has to be very, very clear. And that can also be for Novartis a different answer than for an automobile manufacturer, than for a computer manufacturer. That must not be always the same answer, right? But what is it exactly what we want to achieve? And why is an unbossed organization bringing us much nearer to that, right, Stephen? And are there some, you mentioned at the beginning that the board says, guys, best people, best products, we should be on top of the competition. We are not. We think organization and culture plays a huge part. Are these, objectives, targets, what unbossing is about to reach at Novartis, are they, in the meantime, more concrete?
Yeah, I think so. Again, our board identified what they wanted to see from the next CEO. It was then our new CEO, Vaz, who with his executive committee defined very clearly what that culture and what those objectives will be. And so for us, our DNA is transformative innovation, but we're in the business of reimagining medicine. Mm-hmm. We needed to get better at operational execution. We needed to restore trust with society because our industry doesn't always have the best reputation. Whilst that's concerning because we touch every human life here on the planet. Mm-hmm. We, as an industry, were late to enter in the digital and the data space. And all of that comes down to the fact that we had to, what we call, unleash the power of our people. Mm-hmm. In order to define what unleash the power of our people was, we had several sessions as an executive committee, and we felt that we needed to go closer to our purpose rather than purely focusing on short-term financial targets. Mm-hmm. We think the financial targets will performance will actually improve. Mm-hmm. Again, it should never be confused. If you purely chase financial targets, you will make short-term decisions. But if you chase passionately a purpose, you should also believe that your performance as a result will improve. So it's not that by choosing purpose, you disregard the need to have good performance. So we go very much with purpose. Secondly, we had a perfectionistic culture where a lot of time people were spending time on knowing the answer before the question was asked. And so we are nervous that we lost that natural curiosity. And again, an innovation business needs curiosity. So we're doubling down on curiosity. And then the third thing that came was this need to unboss. The fact that you had teams that were in support of providing the leader with beautiful slides so the leader could take it to the next level. What a waste of energy. And so how do you flip that so that a leader is in support of the team? And it's super interesting in a time that we are dealing with a belief that machine learning and algorithms will solve for everything. I think machine learning algorithms are the answer to a lot of things, but it also shows us that we've rediscovered the genius of the human brain. Because the human brain can do so much more than any algorithm. Mm-hmm. But then it shows that the concept of management, which was invented in the Industrial Revolution to optimize, to drive productivity, to have the same output over and over again, was holding back the creativity of the human potential to deal with extremely complex situations. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, again, this concept of unboss is how do you maximize the potential of your human capital to attack incredibly complex problems? And that's where the strength of the team is so important, and where the role of the leader to create an environment that a team can optimally function is so crucial.
Yeah. In other words, Steven, how can we shift from scaling productivity to scaling creativity and innovation, right? And what energizes me so much, Steven, is the clarity of the story. I just noted it down. Just in 5 minutes, you explained me the strategic canvas of Novartis. You know, the purpose is reimagining medicine. We're an innovation company. In order to do that, we need to increase our operational performance. We need to shift our culture towards curiosity. We need to restore our relation with society. We need to capture the potential of data and machine learning. And we need to unboss our leaders. Bam, that's the strategic canvas. if you know that research shows that... what was the number? I want to say 70% of people in organizations don't know what the strategic canvas of the company is. Already establishing that is a big success for you as a company.
I fully agree, Nick. And what is this 100% pure high fluence spirit? What we are hearing? Amazing. And to be honest, what I'm feeling at the moment, I'm amazed and thankful that a company like Novartis, I mean, we speak about Novartis here, is the chief human resources officer of Novartis Group is talking here and is exactly online with what we have as a spirit. I'm just amazed, Stephen. Mm-hmm. This is a fascinating journey.
Mm-hmm. I do have at the same time. Let's jump to that. So part of the Heifman spirit in this unbossing, and I suppose the same for you, Steven, is let's be honest about all the hard things and the mistakes you need to make as an organization along the journey to finally get where you want to get. So. If you look back on the past 3 years, what would you have done? What were the most successful mistakes? You know, the mistakes that you needed to make to come where you are at now.
I think we went probably too early too public without aspiration, which unleashed a tremendous expectation. And we were, and I was not yet organized and hadn't figured out on how to do it. And so what you get is all your countries, but also the external world is saying like, whoa, look at what Novartis wants to do. And 6 months into it, there was kind of starting to be noise of, we love what Vas is talking about, but we're not seeing it. We're not feeling it. And so after an initial spike in terms of expectation, there was that initial delusion of it's still the same. And so if I would do it again, I would take more time again to align the top 300 behind it, do work on making sure we had the right people in that top 300, and secondly, really understanding what it would require from my team, from my organization, in terms of shifting all the work behind it. Because it's an onion that you peel. Every time that you make progress, you find something else. Yes, we had to change our performance management system because it was the Voldemort of the old culture. Now, changing performance management is very popular. Every company does it. But how do you do it in a way that it supports your own boss culture? We had to change so many things, so many processes. But we had, in the first place, we had to figure out how do you create self-aware leaders. And that was the hardest thing because you had to get leaders comfortable with letting go of control whilst retaining accountability. And those two are very important because I've had examples of leaders saying, fine, I have to let go of control, but they also let go of accountability. And you're back into anarchy. I've seen teams, and I have teenage kids, it's almost like changing your dialogue from parent-child to adult-to-adult. Now, it's not because suddenly, as a leader, you now start to have an adult-to-adult dialogue, that your team, who has been conditioned for decades to be in that child's position of you give me the talking points, you make the decision, you tell me what to do, will now suddenly step up to the challenge and feel safe to own the accountability. And so there were all these dimensions where it took a good year to figure out. So it took several months to figure out what we wanted to do. It took a good year to figure out how we would do it. And then it took another year to test it and have data to give us confidence on what to drive at full scale versus what to run in the background as a nice to have, but was not foundational to the change. So in the beginning, we threw as many things at the organization as we could to see, like spaghetti on the wall, to see what sticks, what drives change. Because all the rest was difficult. You can't benchmark because very few companies at this scale have done it. You have to experiment and you need to be comfortable with failure whilst an organization of 105,000 people is desperately waiting with some level of cynicism to see the change. So that puts a lot of pressure on leaders.
Stephen, talking about benchmark, that will be your fate. They will all benchmark to you in the future. Yeah? Because you are now Nolens Bolens, the Spotify and the Amazon of the pharmaceutical world. That's how it is. Now, Stephen, shortly, when you say we should have put even more time in aligning top 300, because, Nick, that is an important thing also, speaking about aligning of leadership. That means also today, Stephen, if somebody asks the leader of Novartis Brazil, what's unbossing? He gets a clear answer, and this answer is not very far away from your answer, right?
Correct.
Go ahead, Thomas. What I wanted to mention is from our perspective, just sharing some insights with Steven is one of our hardest obstacles, Steven, even if we have a CEO who's truly a believer, is convincing him to invest 3 months, 6 months of dialogue with his top team. The urge, the old conditioned force of we need to have results, we need to go into action right away, as soon as possible. These workshops are okay, these dialogue feedback sessions is okay, but what are the results? We need to go into action. That's a very strong conditioned pattern, especially with top leaders. And so I link that with your what would I have done differently. In my words, I would say spend even more time in having dialogue with the top 300 on what does it mean for us, and what would it mean for myself as one of the top 300 in terms of personal transformation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did in the beginning a few things. So I think symbols matter in just creating the credibility. They won't solve for everything, but you need to take down some of the old symbols of the boss culture to show how serious you are about unboss. And that is often difficult for leaders to give up on some of their status symbols, whether that's reserved offices, whether that is limousines, you name it, you have to take down the symbols. The second thing is radical transparency. We used a tool, but you have many applications called Pigeonhole, where anybody could raise a question and the entire organization could vote on it, and there was the protection of anonymity. And so every month, the CEO, Vlas, and his leadership team would answer questions from the organization. I can tell you some of those questions were deeply personal, deeply painful, occasionally disrespectful. Mm-hmm. And we kept going at it because if you don't show that radical transparency and that vulnerability, again, you have no credibility. Mm-hmm. But then it's also holding gradually your leaders accountable. And there we went with a will and a skill. It was our job to create the will and then subsequently to reskill our leaders. But after a few months, when it was obvious that some of the leaders did not have the will, you need to have a different conversation with them. And so you need to do that discreetly. You can't just throw them out of the window as they did in Middle Ages, because they have been part of the success of this company for so long. But if they're not willing to go on this new journey, you need to tap them on the shoulder, thank them for the fantastic journey we had, and say, this is where our road split. And we had to do that with quite a few leaders and do it with dignity.
In an unbossed way. Also that process in an unbossed way, basically. High psychological safety, a lot of empathy, but a lot of clarity. Yeah. Like, this is the journey, and if you're not taking part in the journey, then this is the this is where we leave each other. I'm quite amazed, Steven, by the fact that even taking into account all the bumps in the roads that probably would have been there, that you had as a company and as a leadership, the balls to be so clear. Because it's easy to say, right? It's one of the most common advices that we give in the journeys. It's like you will, very early stage in the journey, you will notice who's willing and who's not. And you can invest some time in those who are not willing. But somewhere down the road, you will need to be very clear, this is it or it isn't. And it's easy to say it, but even in our own company, Hyphlens, I experience it very difficult to do. So all my, admiration, I would say, and respect for the fact that you found a way to do that in an empathic and humanizing, unbossed way. Very impressive.
I think I am only the process owner or the designer behind the scenes. The real credit goes to Vaz, our CEO, who role models this with vulnerability, sharing his own mistakes, sharing his own learnings, sacrificing a lot of his personal time even to be present, to be visible, to be talking about this. It was also easier for me because I had to first go through my own fears and anxieties of what if this fails. But I had been several years in role, so the hard thing was to reinvent myself. But on the other hand, once I had confronted my fears, I said, actually, I have very little to lose. What a beautiful promise. And the only thing I can do is lean in and go for it 100%. Because the worst thing is that I can say that I've tried and that it didn't work. But for Vaz, who was a brand new CEO, to step or jump into the water and be out there so visible, so transparent, is initially a big bet. And I can understand how many newly appointed CEOs would not feel comfortable making that bet. But if you delegate it to HR, you might as well stop it right away. Because if the leader doesn't own it, and if the leader doesn't hold his or her leadership team entirely accountable, and every opportunity where somebody steps out of line, the leader lets go of it, then it's dead in the water. You shouldn't even spend time on it. Then focus on
exactly,
other
exactly.
Exactly. Focus on the next technical project. Yeah. Stephen, from my side, I want to round that up with a lot of compliments for you. My first compliment is being chosen as the chief HR officer of Novartis Group, a company where I cannot imagine a company where the personnel, the human resources, the people behind it are more important than in a company. They are important anywhere, but in a company like Novartis, especially. Then being in that position at this historical moment, Stephen, where Novartis is going on this amazing unbossing journey, for me, cherry on the cake. And what I love absolutely is that you stay with this provocative, like we at HiFluence, you stay with that provocative term, unbossing. You could have chosen the politically correct agile and empowerment, where, you know, nobody feels threatened. No. You stay with the provocative term unbossing, which leaves nobody cold. I love it.
Mm. Yeah, from my side, Stephen, to round up, there was the message of hope in the last thing that you said. So in the conversation, it becomes clear it was hard. There were some tough choices to be made. It's incredibly, you need courage, both as a leader, as leaders in the organization. But then you said something about your own personal growth in this entire journey, you know, try understanding your own fears and insecurities, and then being able to let them go. And in the end, grow as a human being. And that's what we see in a lot of unbossing journeys, that is, yes, the company becomes more lean and mean and successful. You attract new talents and so on. But what I find my main driver is the personal growth, the human transformation of the human beings in the organization. And that's what you said as well. Like, guys, it's hard. It's tough. You need courage. You need clarity. You need to be a role model every day, every second of the day. But in the end, you grow as a human being, and that's so powerful. And that's I have an identical experience, so I relate with it very strongly.
Same. I mean, we on the journey, I've learned that the cornerstone is self-aware leadership. That means that every person needs to initially have a willingness, but also a trigger for change. And I know exactly when that happened for me. I was already many months into this culture journey. And somebody said to me, "Stephen, you must have the most amazing job in the world." And I said yes, and innerly I didn't feel 100% like a yes. And so I had to explore what is it. I went for a very long dog walk in the pouring rain, and I had to, after, and I'm simplifying it, but I had a fear of failing at this because I didn't know how to change the culture. And so there was this disconnect of, yeah, I have a mandate to change the culture, but I don't know how to do it, and this feels uncomfortable, this feels unsafe, and I may not make it. And so I had to really go deep into understanding what that meant to me and rephrase it. And that was the beginning of a very liberating experience of, well, failure is not what is really the thing here. We're kept from a higher goal, not by obstacles, but we're kept from a higher goal by a clear path to a lesser goal. How often do we set an achievable, easy target for ourselves because it makes us comfortable that we will succeed? Where if you aim high, you may not get there all the way, but man, is it worth it to do it. But I had to go on a complete journey of understanding myself, understanding my insecurities, understanding my relation with keeping control over a situation and what would happen if I let go of control. And it's been so powerful. Like what you described, it is the most liberating thing. It's like switching off a processor that is taking capacity of your computer, and suddenly you free up so much more capacity.
I see we lost Thomas, but it's very funny. Stephen, you are in a completely different context than I am. I mean, I couldn't be farther from the big corporate as Novartis, but I had exactly the same experience when we were raising capital with Hyflens, now with Pebble. I think we're at a valuation of 50 million euros. And so many successful startups, and I had exactly the same thing. I was talking in a very inspirational way the past years about Hyflens and about Pebble, but there was something inside of me that was a, what is it? And just to let you know, both at Hyflens and as Pebble, one of the prerequisites to start at Hyflens or to be for us as Pebble to participate is what we call peace of mind coaching track. And this is pure leadership self-awareness. That's where it starts. The deeper you go as a leader, I see a big correlation with the success of the organization.
Another fascinating podcast. Unbossing done right as a role model in a giant global organization. I'm fascinated. How about you?
Yeah, me too. This was an extremely energizing conversation, above all because there were so many confirmations in it in terms of the lessons learned they had, the mistakes they made, how they tried to solve it. And right. so much confirmation in terms of how we believe unbossing should be approached and what we advise to our customers. So that felt really good as well.
Yeah, it's from time to time I thought I heard Hyflens talking.
Yeah, indeed. And it was really hard to summarize this conversation in only three key takeaways, but I did manage to summarize it in five key takeaways. But really five crucial, extremely important key takeaways for any organization to take from this conversation. If it's okay with you, we just run through them this time.
Perfect, Nick.
So the first one is obviously the cornerstone of unbossing an organization is the individual change, the personal transformation of the leaders and the employees in the organization. Leaders need to show up, and they need to be a role model. And Steven is a great model. His story about how he had to dig deep into himself and learn about his own insecurities and fears, going on a walk with a dog in order to take on this giant journey of unbossing Novartis, was a great example of self-aware leadership. And to me, it's an extreme confirmation to hear him saying that that's the cornerstone of the entire journey, because many of our customers sometimes find it kind of awkward to dive into that area of leadership.
Exactly, Nick. We have that in so many leadership intakes that at the beginning, the leader says, hey, guys, listen, what has that to do now with me as a person? What are you busy with, guys? And here we have the perfect example where Steven even brought the practical example of himself. I think there is no better explanation for it.
Exactly. Second key takeaway was the biggest mistake. And so the biggest mistake was that in the beginning of the journey, they didn't take enough time to have a dialogue and align the top 300 in what unbossing means in the unique context of Novartis, because it can mean something different in every organization. So what it meant for them. And this is also a mistake that we often see, Thomas, with our customers. That is that they say, yeah, this dialogue, these workshops, they're okay, but we need to go into action. We need to go into action. And so also that was a kind of a nice confirmation to understand that he considers that as the biggest mistake. And they also learned from it, because then he gave the example of the platform where anyone in the organization could post questions. So the radical transparency thing. And even though some of these questions were personal, were awkward, were even very direct or aggressive, they in this approach, and especially the CEO, Vas, persisted in taking up these questions and trying to answer these questions. And so basically inviting the entire organization into some kind of open dialogue on what unbossing means. So that's also very powerful stuff.
Fully agree, Nick. Nick, I could tell you out of hand 5 or even 10 very traditional companies who would, for example, have stopped immediately this open transparency session the moment when uncomfortable questions are coming in.
Yeah, Novartis, or not even start.
Or not even start, yeah. Or at that moment to say, oh, listen, guys, this is going somewhere where we don't want it to go. Let's just stop that. No, Novartis didn't do that. Novartis did go through, and this is commitment first class. The second thing, and also that, Nick, we are discussing it often with clients, is align the leadership before you go on the journey. Because even if every member of the leadership team says, yes, unbossing, let's do it, and you would interview them individually, everybody then would still have a different definition of unbossing and a different filling in of that whole thing. And that is a concept for disaster. And I think this aligning the leadership, and we are at the moment just discussing, as you know, with a client concerning the timeline, do it first before you start the journey.
Well, yeah, it's the start of the journey, and it's the paradox, right? The actual implementation of the unbossed organization comes from the layers closest to the customers. That's where the experiments start. That's where most of the value is created, the unbossing value is created. But before you can do that, you need to crystallize what it means for you as a top leader and align and have a lot of dialogue with your leadership on that meaning of unbossing for your company. Number three, Thomas, number three, it's a journey. It's a journey. It's a journey. It's a journey. It's not a project. If you if you consider this as a project that you can delegate to HR, don't even start it.
Start with it.
His explicit words. I must say, I was loving those statements so much because I couldn't agree more. It's not optional. So you invite people. In the beginning, you invite people, but when it comes clear that people, well, keep on and continue resisting the journey in itself, you need to make clear decisions. Mm. And they are now 3 years down the road. They've trained 5,000 of 20,000 leaders. So basically, they are still scaling their experiments.
Exactly. Just a short stop because you said it. I don't see any global company more committed to unbossing than Novartis at this moment. They are now 3 years down the road, Nick, and they are not even seeing the end of the journey. Interesting, mm-hmm. right?
Yes, and it's if you look at Haier in China, if you look at Buurtzorg in the Netherlands, these are journeys 10 years, 15 years. And obviously, in every year of that journey, you achieve incredible results thanks to the journey.
Right.
But it's not, again, it's not a project with a final deadline and like, okay, now we're here. Because the essential question is, what can we do better today than tomorrow? And believing that the answer to that question is mostly in the hearts and the heads of the people working in the organization, it can always improve and go better. So it's a never-ending journey of improving your organization.
Where's yeah.
Number four was I like number four because sometimes we talk to customers that kind of. Position the unbossing journey in the rather soft people HR area.
Yes, and the cozy stuff.
Yes, and what Steven, although it's definitely a part of the entire self-aware leadership and things like that, but what he also said was we measure, and learn. So what I found fascinating is that they capture cultural data and they capture sales data. And they try to find correlations between the impact of this unbossing journey on the outcome in terms of sales and productivity and innovation, which is in the end the reason why you do it. You do it to become a better organization with better results.
Very true. And for me, I have to say there, the scientific DNA of Novartis is also playing well for them.
It's a strength, yes.
It's an absolute strength, which in this case, especially with the unbossing, an organization like Novartis would never accept on that behalf vague stuff, where there would be no definition, are we successful or not. It's mm-hmm. just not scientific enough, and I think that plays very well for them.
Yeah, and that was also the main driver. The main driver was the analysis that with the talent they have and the market potential they have, they were not reaching the results they believed they could reach. And that's why they started unbossing. So it was very result-driven, and the entire philosophy is not just a philosophy to have a philosophy. No, the philosophy is there because they believe this is the road to success.
Right, Nick. And that brings me to this wonderful sentence also of Steven, unbossing is about clarity.
That's my key takeaway number five to wrap things up. What is unbossing? Unbossing is about clarity. And God, what a clear example did he give about Novartis itself. He said, our purpose is reimagining medicine. And if we want to do that, we are an innovation company. We need to increase our operational performance. We need to shift from a culture of perfectionism to a shift to a culture of curiosity. Mm-hmm. We need to restore our relationship with society. And we need to leverage the potential of technology and data. There you have it. The strategic framework of Novartis. Crystal clear.
Crystal clear. fully agree with you, Nick. And again, how many discussions do we have, Nick, even with convinced CEOs of customer companies, where we say, be more clear, please.
Mm-hmm.
Give examples. Make interviews. How is it now? How is it supposed to be in the future? Be very, very clear about why you are doing this.
Yeah, but you know why I think so many customers struggle with it? Because again, they see this as a project. Let's do 2-3 workshops, and then we'll have a crystal clear identity and who we are and what we need to achieve. Whereas also that is a journey. The journey of talking to customers and refining it, the journey of taking in the intelligence of your employees and refining it. And basically the framework that Steven explained in the conversation, that's not something that they came up with in a one-day workshop. This is part of the journey of continuously refining this message, this identity. Who are we? What do we need to improve? And as long as if you consider it a project, let's define the purpose of our company. Let's do 2-3 workshops with some consultants. Then you end up with a slogan on the wall, but not with clarity in the organization.
Wonderful, wonderfully said, Nick. Wonderful. So we will stay connected tightly with Novartis, with Steven and with the others. And that is a journey which is fascinating to watch.
Absolutely, absolutely. And now it's time to go to the next one. Ladies and gentlemen, we hope that you've enjoyed this inspiring episode of the Unbossing Podcast. To round today's episode up, we would like to give the word to Thomas for a very special request.
Thanks, Nick. Dear listeners, if you would like to recommend to us other possible interview guests who did lead successfully or even unsuccessfully interesting and inspiring projects where they liberated their people from bureaucracy, gave them more freedom in order to do their work and their passion, please feel free to contact us. You find the contact details on our website.